You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hi, welcome to Blogging Heads TV. You're watching Culturally Determined, and I'm your host, Aria Cohen-Wade. And my guest today is Robbie Suave. Robbie, could you introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm an associate editor at Reason Magazine, Reason.com, and I'm a columnist for the Daily Beast.
I didn't know you were at the Daily Beast now. That's cool. So thanks for coming on today. We have a couple topics we're going to discuss, possibly all interrelated. One of them is Donald Trump, the man of the moment. One of them is what you've really been covering a lot lately, kind of the modern campus protest movement and a lot of issues related to that. And my own personal theory about what's really going on campuses. And then like a libertarian, I think libertarians like to talk about libertarianism a lot. So we have a libertarian here.
That's fair.
We'll kind of discuss some libertarian things. Okay, what the hell do you think is going on with Trump? What's going on, man? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think we're seeing, my theory is just that we're seeing the power of a celebrity candidate. I'm surprised more celebrities haven't run for president before. I think they will now. The tremendous advantage of name recognition has been his big asset. I talk to people who I'm back home in Michigan right now. I talk to the woman who cuts my hair. She loves Donald Trump. She worships Donald Trump. But she doesn't really care about his policies or anything. She just watched his show. She watches a lot of reality TV. I watch a lot of reality TV. I get it. They just like him. People tell me over and over again when I say, but he wants to ban all immigrants. He wants to do all these crazy things. They don't care. They just like him as a person, which squares with what we know about how people operate in terms of their political views. It's not that they have political views and then they come to support the candidate who best represents them. It's that they decide who they like, and then they adopt their view, the views of the person they like. And they'll defend the views, even if you point it out to them, well, but they used to think this. They don't care. They're not thinking in terms of that. They're thinking in terms of personality. And I think
that
the failure to kind of
grapple
with that has been a big, is a story here.
Yeah, I broadly agree with that. I mean, we have had celebrities. Ronald Reagan was a celebrity. He was an actor. He became president.
Right.
George Washington was a celebrity. Not a modern celebrity, certainly. Dwight Eisenhower, he had some big accomplishments before he became president. defeating the Third Reich. I broadly agree with that. I agree with what you're saying about politics. I've been saying this for a while. There's an essay, we'll link to it in the sidebar, that Chris Hayes wrote before Chris Hayes was Chris Hayes. He was just a guy who wrote for The Nation. He wrote this piece about stumping for John Kerry in 2004 and how difficult it was, talking to the famous undecided voters. And a lot of it, it's one of the most interesting pieces of politics like written in the past 20 years. What he says is that most Americans don't have solid political beliefs. They have idiosyncratic beliefs, mostly involving personality. So the example I remember, he says, he's going door to door, I think in New Hampshire, knocking on doors, trying to get people to vote for Kerry. He talks to someone who says, oh, I won't vote for him. He's a lawyer. I don't trust lawyers.
Right.
The vast majority of people in the House of Representatives and the Senate went to law school. There's just a lot of weird beliefs. People don't think about politics in terms of issues. This is another point that Hayes writes in this essay. They think about it in terms of who do I like, who's on my side, that kind of stuff. And Donald Trump is very good at that.
Yeah, and you hear people say things like, well, I like how he's against political correctness. He calls it like he sees it. He's a businessman. He has accomplishments. We're not going to be politically correct anymore. And what does that even mean? That's such a vague sort of, I mean, I've been trying to kind of explore the concept of what people even mean by political correctness. To me, it means, looking at the campus stuff very specifically, these kinds of actual punishments for students and faculty members who maybe express controversial ideas. But that's very narrow to campuses. In the broader country.
Yeah, most people don't go to college at
right.
all.
Right.
Maybe they know people who go to college, but the majority of Americans do not have a 4-year college degree. And most people who do go to college don't go to the sort of elite colleges where these protest movements are happening.
Right, right. Where these actually, to be fair, kind of very, very over the top sort of 1984 level silly amounts of censorship are happening. Most people aren't there. Most people are in the real world. But I guess there is a sense that you can't tell offensive jokes. Who wrote the column? They did an interview. It was Ralph Nader, I think, right? Did an interview just a couple weeks ago, saying like he gets Trump's appeal. He gets it. You talk to the construction workers that used to make ethnic jokes all the time, and now that's your sort of they're that's out of fashion. You can't do that anymore. And they're
ethnic jokes might be uncouth, but you laugh because they're based on truth. That's from Avenue Q. Everybody's a little bit racist. We can link to that one as well.
Yeah. But it's and this is and it would be
yeah,
so
okay,
weird.
There's a lot of stuff that people feel like yeah, what does that mean when people say Trump's not PC, like he's telling it like it is? I think it means that there's a sense that a certain type of lifestyle and way of living in America is becoming out of date. And people feel like that way of lifestyle is not just telling jokes, it's the way you think. It's thinking that gay people shouldn't be elementary school teachers.
Yeah, I think that's...
That's not okay anymore in polite company to say, I don't want some gay guy teaching my second grader. You can't say that in polite company anymore. You might lose your job if you say that.
Right. Well, you can lose your job over tweeting all sorts of things now. Not that these kinds of regular folks
This would not be tweeted. This would be something said over lunch or something.
Yeah.
And then it gets back to the boss. And then maybe you get hauled in and get reprimanded because you said something that's anti-gay.
And I guess that makes sense because most people are, that's kind of that's the thing that keeps them awake at night, for lack of a better, they're not focused, you know, the abstract immigration policy or economic policy, people aren't super well informed about it for good reason because it doesn't really, it matters to them, but they have no say in it. They only have their one vote. You know, we know about rational political ignorance, that people are not educated about policy, political ideas for good reason.
Can you define that term? That's an interesting term. I never heard that before. Rational political ignorance. Can you define that?
Yeah, economists, particularly libertarian economists, talk about this, that most people are ignorant about policy ideas and politics, but they're ignorant for good reasons, for rational reasons, because the cost of becoming educated about political ideas, how the economy works, these complicated questions, the cost is high for no benefit, because at the end of the day, all you can do is cast one vote to kind of abstractly influence how these things practice. It's the same reason why I don't know anything about performing brain surgery. It would be useful. Brain surgery is important, but I have no, there's no reason for me to know.
Leave it to the experts.
Right.
And Trump has, that's interesting you say it that way, because Trump has a thing where he's always like, I'll hire the best people. We'll get to the bottom of this. I know all the smartest people. I went to Wharton. I know a lot of smart people. This is kind of the way he shows what he's going to do about politics. He doesn't give a lot of hard answers. He's like, we'll figure this out. What he said when he first announced his Muslim ban policy idea, whatever the fuck that was, he said something like, until we figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
We have to ban Muslim immigration until we figure out what's going on. So even in this thing that's very offensive and almost definitely unconstitutional, he says, this is just temporary. This is just a temporary measure until we figure out what's going on. Who's we? How do we figure it out? And how could we possibly really know everything that's going on in the world? These are left unsaid. But to the average person, they're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until we figure out what's going on, yeah, this makes sense to me, yeah.
Yeah, that seems like a reasonable sort of moderate position to, I think, a lot of people. That seems like, yeah, well, why wouldn't we do that? Why wouldn't we just, you know, this isn't working, let's just pause this and figure stuff out.
Figure out what's going on. What's going on? You know, that's kind of a big thing about the world, trying to figure out what the hell's going on. So some people think that Trump does know what the hell's going on. He knows some stuff. He knows very little, but he knows a lot about a little. That's the kind of why he's succeeding, I think.
He's good at making it sound like he knows something to people who admire this kind of reality TV personality. I mean, he used to do wrestling, right? Didn't he do wrestling video, like celebrity wrestling appearances?
He's appeared in WWF or WWE.
Yeah.
He's appeared on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Well, I don't watch wrestling, but a lot of people do. A lot of people are like, oh, I remember when he kicked that guy's ass. Probably that's like a, yeah, he should be president too, you know, that's.
Yeah, probably if Vince McMahon wanted to run for president, he'd probably do only slightly worse than Donald Trump is doing. Because and there's a lot of people who are really smart, who know that wrestling is fake, who really like wrestling. Especially a lot of people, I don't know if you follow people who are kind of on weird Twitter.
A little bit.
Some of these people, one of them is actually a former guest on Culturally Determined, Felix Biederman, who's one of the comedy writers who invented Carl Digler. He's very into professional wrestling. Or actually, he's into MMA, but I think he talks about professional wrestling also. MMA is real, professional wrestling is fake. But in the same way that a lot of comic book nerds became political pundits, people like Iglesias, Dave Weigel, Jermell Bowie, Ta-Nehisi Coates, you know, this is like a world that is phony, but has some entertaining parts to it that make even adults who know it's phony want to keep on watching.
Right. And I don't mean to sound like I'm some, lofty intellectual, totally immune to, there are TV shows I like, there are cultural things I like. I'm sure I would get taken in by a Mark Cuban presidential run as much as anyone else. So.
Yeah, well, at least Mark Cuban isn't an obvious con man, the way that
Yeah,
Donald
right.
Trump is an obvious con man. I mean, that's kind of the weird thing is that he is a con man. Like,
Yeah.
he is a literal con man. He's been running assorted cons for his entire life. Trump University is a con. Well, I think the conservative movement is a scam. So the fact that a scam artist is taking over the conservative movement and is destroying it is more than poetic irony. It's a great thing for America, I think. What do you think about that?
I don't know if it's a. I'm not sure I would call it a great thing for America. I have definitely changed my mind in the face of new evidence about what the Tea Party and the conservative movement was about. I remember, spectating a couple Tea Party events back in 2010 and sort of dismissing, mostly dismissing the accusation made by people on the left that this is really about just sort of racist opposition to President Obama. I said, no, I think it's a more principled critique of big government than you're giving it credit for. Although there always was kind of this undercurrent of anti-immigrant sentiment that didn't really square with the supposed free market sort of ideology of the Tea Party movement. Now, in hindsight, that all looks very incorrect. That looks totally incorrect. I mean, I was totally incorrect. That yeah, it really was sort of a pop rather than a principled ideological stance against big government and spending, kind of a libertarian thing. It doesn't look like that. Now it just looks like a outpouring of
Populism.
pop, yeah, of populist opposition to a president who, and I think, yeah, for one reason, looked different than people in power used to, and that's part of it. And that now, I mean, I see these same people now are all not unilaterally, but a lot of these same forces who were for this back then are now backing Trump, who is the least libertarian Republican candidate in decades. I think you could make that argument. He overlaps with a small
He's not a
government.
conservative.
He's not a libertarian at all. He's not even a conservative. He's been not even really Republican, particularly. He doesn't interlap.
He's not
He
a
doesn't
Republican.
overlap with.
Obviously, he's
Yeah.
not a Republican,
Yeah,
which is very strange.
it
I
is
mean, Bernie
strange.
Sanders is not a Democrat. He wanted to become the Democrat nominee. Well, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is not a Republican. He is poised to become the Republican nominee. I still don't think that's going to happen, but that's my own crazy theory.
Well, but yeah, I don't I know, I think he is, but you wouldn't I couldn't blame the party for violating all rules to deny it to him. He doesn't overlap with a conservative. I mean, he's not a foreign he's not a neoconservative, he's not a conservative on foreign policy, which that's
No.
the only kind of silver
He's kind
lining
of a
to him to me.
reactionary, but that's about
Yeah.
it.
Yeah, but
But
he's
that
but
but it turns out that strangely enough, the so-called conservative movement isn't very conservative. That's
Yeah.
one thing we've learned this year. The conservative movement is more reactionary than Burkean.
Yeah. Yeah,
So shockingly, the great mass of the wise and good American people did not read Edmund Burke in college. I can't believe it. What a shock.
everyone's yeah, some the Republican consultants didn't know that. They didn't figure that out.
Well, I think they did know that because it's a
Scam.
scam. I've been tweeting a hashtag no one else cares about. The conservative movement is a scam. It's a scam. I mean, you're not part of the conservative movement. You're a libertarian. Do you agree that the conservative movement is in essence a scam?
I think yes. I wouldn't totally dis I agree with in part and disagree with in part. I think certainly the conservative sort of media front is a scam. I mean the sort of, we can go down the list of Fox News personalities who
Rush
appear to
Limbaugh,
have
Glenn
some kind
Beck.
of principled conservative ideology. Basically now it totally seems like a scam. It's all about Or they got totally taken in by this cult of personality that really their ideas should have rendered them immune to, because he doesn't overlap with their political ideas at all on any front.
Well, what political ideas did they truly have?
Right, so they didn't. So now we know that they actually didn't. That it was about something else. It was about I don't know, selling their
selling selling seeds, selling gold doubloons, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Selling
snake oil.
Yeah, selling perhaps almost literal snake oil. I'm sure there's some kind of nutritional supplement that you know, what is that thing, Herbalife? I'm sure that's involved there somehow. You know, multi-level marketing.
Yeah.
The whole thing is a scam. Well, okay.
Yeah.
There's this well-known dictum in economics. I can't remember who said it. You probably know. If something can't last forever, it won't.
Yeah,
it can't last forever that one half of American politics is dominated by a party that doesn't actually serve the interests of the people who are voting for it. That can't last forever. I think it mostly was because of America's unusual political history and American racism that the GOP was able to get votes from poor white people and serve the interests of rich white people since 1968 or so. So, okay, it's ending. Like this is 1860. I think the GOP is going to go defunct. What do you think about that?
I certainly think that could happen, if, especially if Trump continues to exert powerful influence over the party, even though in the wake of his likely defeat in November. Because he doesn't, there's no reason necessarily that he goes away. His people will all say, well, we were betrayed by, you know, by the plutocrats who run the Republican Party. And he, you know, unless he could, now he could just tire of it. He could just decide he wants to, you know, run for emperor of space or something. And,
well,
and that
he wants to be Grand Marshal. That's what he wants to be, Grand Marshal of the 4th of July parade. This is the, and in my conversation with Jim Newell of Slate, he brought up this point that Trump, maybe what Trump is most proud of in his political career is the fact that he was the Grand Marshal of the Israel Day parade, which is not a real thing. There's no Israel Day. The Israel Day parade in New York City, and how this was a very brave stance he took, like in 2003 or whatever. Okay, Grand Marshal. There was another Grand Marshal, Grand Marshal Pétain in France. Trump would be very happy being the Grand Marshal of America. But does he actually want to be president? Does he want to deal with Paul Ryan? Does he want to deal with Mitch McConnell or Harry Reid or Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi or any of these people? No.
He wants,
what do you think about
he
that?
Wants to put his name, you know, he wants to put his name on the White House. He loves seeing these kinds of, I think these kinds of people love watching themselves on TV. He probably still, he doesn't tire of it. I think he loves seeing himself on TV.
He loves the adulation.
He loves it. So I think he will, you know, deal with the actual having to actually run the government. Yeah, I don't think that he's like looking forward to doing that, but I think he'll deal
with
it.
Well, that's when we get into my conspiracy theory, but probably the blogging his audience has heard about that enough at this point. No, okay, if he doesn't want to win, really. I mean, he wants to win, but doesn't want to be president because he's a winner.
Yeah.
So he can't lose. Okay, it's more like he wants to not lose than win. There's a difference there. He wants to not lose because he's a winner. He's like Charlie Sheen, hashtag winning.
Yeah.
I mean, his political persona is very similar to Charlie Sheen.
Oh, absolutely.
And probably his personal life as well. He's been with a lot of women. And likely paid for abortions in the past, which is a strange thing for the Republican presumptive nominee to. He didn't deny it. Maureen Dowd. Maureen Dowd asked him whether he'd ever paid for a woman to have an abortion, and he wouldn't answer that question. That's weird.
Yeah.
Okay, if it's not in Paul Ryan's interest for Donald Trump to be the GOP nominee, and it's not truly in Donald Trump's interest for him to be the GOP nominee, you tell me what's going to happen.
I think he's still gonna be the nominee. I think he's gonna be the candidate because I think he wants to be. I think he does want to be president because he wants more attention. And I think the other stuff, yeah, he's not looking forward to it, but he doesn't. It's not gonna stop him from the attention that he craves. It's not gonna come between him and the throne he wants for himself.
Yeah, throne. I mean, he wants to sit on the Iron Throne.
I mean, probably the day-to-day organizing of whatever pageant that his people are in charge of. I don't really follow that stuff very well.
Pageant is a good word.
Yeah, but I mean the Miss, what, it's Miss America or it's Miss the one that his people are
Miss
in charge
Universe.
Of. Right.
Miss Universe.
Probably the day-to-day organizing of that, he doesn't care about either, and it's a distraction and he would rather not do it, but he does it because he enjoys the power of crowning the most beautiful woman in the country or the world or whatever.
And then what else does he probably do? Maybe he doesn't do this anymore. I'm sure at some point he somehow had sex with many of the women who appeared on the Miss Universe pageant. Okay, so this guy is a scumbag in his essence. He is an awful person. Okay, did you I should have sent you this link beforehand. I wrote a little piece. It's a little weird satire about Trump faking his own death to get out of this. The link will be posted. I apologize for not sending it to you beforehand. I'll just read you a little bit of this. Okay, so the
Please.
premise is that I'll read you the beginning. This is like a fake New York Times article. Okay. Trump death, quote, a hoax. GOP convention still deadlocked. Dateline Cleveland. Chaos reigned as the Republican National Convention stretched into its third week, with delegates still in shock over the revelation that Donald J. Trump is not actually dead. Mr. Trump, the real estate developer and former reality TV star who electrified the nation with his plain-spoken style and bombastic rallies, released a pre-recorded video message from an undisclosed location yesterday stating that the apparent crash of his Trump Air jet was, quote, a fake. Going down a little bit, it appears that Mr. Trump, with the help of a group of former cast members of the NBC television show The Apprentice, faked his own death in order to avoid being nominated as a Republican candidate for president of the United States. So this is a joke. This is my way of making this point. Does he want to be president? No. That wouldn't be fun for him. He can't put his name on the White House. That would be illegal. He would probably, if he actually did win the presidency somehow, he would probably be impeached within a couple months. And then his vice president, who maybe would be like Omarosa or someone from The Apprentice, maybe his daughter or one of his creepy sons, would become president. And then that person probably impeached. And then Paul Ryan gets to be president or Nancy Pelosi. So what does he actually want? Does he actually want power? Well, I will read to you from the transcript of the message that Donald Trump sends out after he fakes his own death. Here's what he says. And it wasn't about getting power. Listen, I have plenty of power. If I wanted more power, I would have run against that bozo, what's his face, de Blasio in New York. And I would have won, okay? Because people in New York, they love me. They really do. And honestly, who would even want to be president of America? I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, it's a lousy job. A whole lot of grief. And for what? Bupkis. I mean, you don't even get paid that much. I had my people look into it. And listen to this. The president only gets 400K a year. It's nuts. Okay, does he want to be president? No. It's a crappy job. Like, we've seen those before and after photos of Obama. It's one of the hardest jobs in the world, along with like Pope and UN Secretary General. Does he want this stress at age 70? No, he wants to go play golf. So.
Well, yeah. So an interesting, I think, corollary to that is that there's a lot of people, I think, supporting him who also don't really want him to be president, but they're supporting him because this is sending, it's about sending a message. It's about saying we're not going to be politically correct anymore. We're going to, enough is enough. It's not that they actually think he would be like the greatest president in the world. It's a
Right.
way of signaling opposition to this kind of cult in the in a like a weird in a culture battle, not one that's like a typical like what you would think of as social like right versus left, but a different kind of coarse culture war.
The
And that
the
he's their
folk like
horse for that.
folk 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 culture war or something you could call it, or the
Yeah.
Volkish culture war. Yeah, people who feel like the country make America great again. It's a good slogan. It's very close to John Kerry's slogan in 2004, which was something like, "Let America be America again. Change we can believe in. Hope and change." These are all like resonant slogans. Okay, my country has changed and I don't like it. Donald Trump will make America great again. That's the core of his platform that roughly 40 to 45% of the GOP primary electorate responded to. But he can never actually be president, absent some black swan that we're not anticipating. It can't be a bad terrorist attack. That just happened a week ago. There was a worst mass shooting in American history. Trump is not rising. He's falling. He's doing his same bullshit, and everyone is like, he's losing people, not gaining people.
I well now I have to I don't think I've ever like publicly been forced to like this me giving this opinion has been recorded, so now I'm going to be on the hook for it when I'm wrong. But I still expect him to lose, but I think he will do better than expected. I think polls and expert predictions have including my own have downplayed his chances throughout I mean for months throughout the entire Republican primary. And so now maybe I'm just like overcorrecting for my past being wrong, but I think I have a standing bet with someone that he will actually outperform Romney's electoral college.
Really? Okay, I would take the other side of that bet if possible. No, I think he would win 2 to 3 states, especially if there is a third party, like true conservative running. I think it would be like 1984 or like Nixon's campaign in 68. with Hillary in the Nixon role.
So if there's
I think it's gonna be
actually
a bloodbath.
if there's a, actually a serious defect level of defection, like if Gary Johnson actually gets like 5% of the vote or something, then yeah, he's going to be totally destroyed. If David French became a thing, that I mean, that's not happening. If Bill Kristol pulled something, if there was anything like that happens, then yes.
Yeah.
But I assume that actually what's going to happen is that pretty much all the Republicans are going to vote for him.
I don't think so. I really don't think so.
I mean, that's the question. There's
He's
still
not a real Republican. Why would they vote for him?
a lot of time between now and the election for him to reassure the Paul Ryans of the world that you just are gonna have to vote for me. And
He's
I
not
and he's
doing
gonna
it.
make up and he's gonna pick up I think he's gonna pick up lower class, white working class kind of Bernie people in his head. Not all of them, not most of them,
Some,
but
yeah, I
some of
agree. He
them.
could pick up some Bernie people.
Some of
The
them.
Bernie fans online hate this, but it's very obvious to me that Trump and Bernie have similar appeals. Do you know about the alt-right? You must, right? These people call themselves the
Yes,
alt-right.
I have tangled
So
with them before.
I have two. I'll post some links, but actually, probably our mutual friend Michael Brennan Doherty alerted these people to my original presence. They saw my name; it has Cohen in it, and they went to town. I'm the kind of person who just likes talking to people. People like Robbie Suave, but also just kind of crazy people to see what they have to say. So I had some very long direct message, private Twitter conversations with a couple of these people. Okay, one of them, his Twitter handle is such that you would believe this is someone who supports fascism. He told me that this guy is a young underemployed guy in the Chicago area. He told me that a couple of years ago he was a socialist. So now he became a fascist. So that's kind of a weird, like, European history replaying itself. The National Socialists. But these people are not a majority of the country. They are like the total Trump base is only around like 20 to 25% of the country. The anti-Trump people include the vast middle of the country. They will prevail over the Trump people. I'm 100% sure of it.
I mean, and the fact that Trump is kind of the chosen person of these alt-right people, it goes to. I mean, I found, I'm maybe switching gears a little bit to look at the student thing. I found students who are writing Trump 2016 in chalk on their campuses. They're students
And
for
that
Trump organizations. And again,
sends everyone into a tizzy.
Yes, these things are semi-ironic because I think in a lot, or even the vast majority of cases, this isn't actually sincere. Yes, I want Donald Trump to be president. It's
No,
that,
this is like farting in church.
it's antagonizing. And again, when we're talking about college campus, antagonizing for kind of good reason. This is the only environment where I think it's fair to be kind of so upset about the kind of toxic level of political correctness. I mean, because there's a, it's act it's not just, oh, you should be more polite. It's like, well, you were not polite. You didn't understand why the thing you said was impolite, and now you're going to be like subjected to disciplinary sanctions because we're insane people. You can't even use the word insane because that's like an ableist slur.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not even a
Why don't
language
we
we
move
want.
on to talking about colleges in general? This has kind of been your beat the past in the recent past, and you're still writing about it. I mean, the semester, the year is over, so it's probably quieting down a little bit. You were on Blogging Heads previously with is the guy's name Angus Johnson, or am I getting that name wrong?
Yes, that's correct.
Talking about this stuff. So this was an unusual 2016 is a banner year in America for many reasons. The Olympics are coming, Donald Trump. But it was 2015, 2016 school year was kind of an eruption on campuses in a way that hasn't happened in a unified way since maybe the late 60s. What do you, now that the semester is over, what have you kind of learned about the campus movement? Do you think it's going to continue next year? Like, where are we with this new movement?
I mean, these things are cyclical. We're definitely in an upswing of sort of activism and kind of in the students are very, very empowered at the moment. The last 5 years, it's going like this with the kind of ability of students to organize and to actually extract real victories over their administrators, over their professors. The faculty is running scared of students at the moment. Administrators are kind of caving into the way they want. You're seeing, presidents, administrators resigning. There's a real, I don't think the number of students kind of advocating for radical changes has expanded or contracted. I think it's basically the same number of students as it's always been, a small minority of students who want these really really palpable changes that kind of sometimes seem crazy to us. They want, you know, they want administrators who fail to protect them from offensive Halloween costumes run off campus. The kind of students who want that.
Yes. So I that's my alma mater. So I want to talk about that a little bit more, Yale University. So do you think, you know, this really, the majority of it happened during the fall semester. And yeah, it's cyclical in that every year a quarter of college students graduate and then a new 25% joins campus. So it's hard to sustain campus movements. And then the kids are having internships or going abroad or something. Right. So it's like, do you think this is going to, is this like a lasting movement or is this like a blip?
I actually think it is a lasting, it's not going to be like a lasting movement for years and years, but it will endure and get stronger, I think, for now, because a lot of people don't understand, there is actually sort of a governmental policy aspect empowering them. The education department issued guidance on what constitutes harassment about 5 years ago under the Office for Civil Rights, under Title IX, the gender equality law. They started to give very specific guidance to college, saying if you don't protect students' feelings, and it's their feelings on a subjective basis, you have to...
Wait, the word feelings was used? That's a pretty abstract word.
What does that mean, feelings? They say that harassment, rather than being an objective, severe, and pervasive situation, is more in the eyes of the beholder. That was explicit in the guidance. So, okay. And they're telling colleges, if you're not doing a better job of preventing that, then you're allowing a hostile kind of, it comes out of employment law sort of thinking, a hostile work environment for these students. So you have to be proactive in preventing this. Students now, so this happened 5 years ago, this kind of guidance started coming out. So students have had 5 years to understand that being offended confers enormous power on you under kind of the guidance from the federal government. So I think that's underlying a lot of the changes we've seen in the last like 2 years, is that now the offended student has always been on campus. He's always been, he or she or Z has always been demanding their kind of changes. But now that student now that student has a policy on the books, giving them power.
Okay. That's interesting. So it is kind of like what it reminds me of is it's like a vulgar Marxism kind of reading of this. Like, there was an institutional change that maybe was not really thought through, and then what flows from it is unexpected. Okay, let's talk about what happened at Yale a little bit, my alma mater, Bula Bula. Something happened, there's a husband and wife team. So Yale has residential colleges, there's 12 of them. Each college has a dean who's kind of in charge of academics and a master, although they're not called masters anymore. In late 2015, they were called masters. And this is a person who's kind of in charge of the social aspects of what's going on campus or in the residential college, which is essentially a glorified dorm. But also, if you're having a problem with your roommate, you'll go to the master. If maybe you need, like, maybe the master is the first person you talk to if you feel like you're really overloaded with courses or you're having a personal problem or something. So it's a weird position that is kind of based off of the Oxford-Cambridge model, and sometimes the master doesn't really do that much. That kind of happened when I was in college. The dean was more like the guy who was the go-getter, and everyone loved the dean. The master kind of didn't do that much. So the master of Silliman College, which is actually the biggest college on the Yale campus, just because it's a huge dorm, his wife sent out an email. This became well-known about Halloween costumes, and then this happens all the time these days. Someone either goes to a Halloween party or some kind of themed costume party that like a frat or something puts on, and they're dressing in a costume that is racist, semi-racist, culturally inappropriate, or just, you know, offensive towards the average person. And so Yale sent out some guidance about this. The master of Silliman, his last name was Christakis. His wife was kind of like the assistant master, which is a position sometimes granted to the spouse of the master if he or she has a Yale affiliation, which often they do. So she sent out an email kind of saying, like, you know, the kids should be able to decide for themselves. This sparked a real angry counter-protest and was most famously captured on film, where a female student was shouting down the master in the courtyard in a very angry way that, to me personally, was shocking, because I couldn't imagine myself or anyone I knew at Yale. I graduated in 2005, ever talking to a authority figure in that way. And so she was very upset. She shouted him down and then stormed off. And what happened in the end was that the Christakis decided to leave. And kind of randomly, maybe not randomly, ironically, for our Blogging Heads fans, the new master of, so they changed the name Master because Master obviously has some negative connotations in American history. The new head of Silman College is Lori Santos. Well, Lori Santos is a former Blogging Heads show host, because we had a show on Blogging Heads a couple years ago that was run by the Yale Psychology Department, and she is a tenure professor in the psych department. So now she's moved on up from Blogging Heads, and now she's the head of Sylvan College. So that's the background here. What do you think about all this craziness
Yeah,
that happened at Yale?
I would just add to clarify. So they were these kids standing up to an authority figure, but it wasn't they weren't actually standing up to an authority figure because they're like against authority figures. They were actually demanding more authority for the authority figures. They were
Yes, it's
upset.
a weird irony.
Yeah, they were upset that these they saw the role of the master of the college, the administrators. They said this explicitly. They said it subsequently in op-eds. They wrote about the situation. That they see they the view the role of those administrators is to be their parents, is to is the
In
father role.
loco, well, they are
Yeah.
in loco parentis. That's the old-fashioned term
Yeah.
for in place of the parent. In many ways, this is a role that any college that has people living on campus, they are in loco parentis. If the kid drinks too much, they have to deal with it somehow. If the kid is involved in some kind of criminal activity, the college has to deal with it in some way. But yeah, the students want the administration to have more power, not less power, which is like the old style of protest. Would be like the students want power, and now, somewhat unusually, the students want the administrators to have more power. Am I right about that?
Yeah, they want different powers. They want expanded powers for the administrators to protect, to safeguard students' emotional needs, to make it so that they don't have to confront things that provoke or irritate them, including ideas that they find offensive, different ways of thinking that they don't like, things that trigger them, things that everything that bothers them is a kind of trauma, including their own professors who bring up harsh points or who challenge them, the kind of environment that we want in the classroom. These students think that they have a right to not undergo that. These, if you read, there was a piece in the New Yorker about the Oberlin activist community just like 3 weeks ago or something. They interviewed a bunch of these students, and it's incredible. Consistently, they think they are not at college to be changed, that they are at college to tell everyone why they're right. They don't want to change. They refuse to change. They said, after college is over, we're going right back to where we've come from to continue our activism and our kind of the social justice warrior is the kind of is the word that was I'm
That's this
increasingly
what kind
using
of
unironically now. I
Okay,
vowed
so
never to use that word in a
people are taking that term for themselves. That's kind of the SJW is how in these online wars people refer to this kind of type of person, social justice warrior. But there are people out there who are now saying, "Yes, I am a social justice warrior."
Well,
That's interesting.
did you watch that? So just this was just last week at Mizzou, at the University of Missouri, where there was also a lot of activism this year and the high profile kind of stuff happening there. So just last week there was a vigil for the victims of Orlando,
Okay.
and a student, a associated with the local Black Lives Matter movement, she got up to speak. It was just anyone could speak, and she got up and said, she was a Black student. She got up and said, I was afraid to come up here and talk because you're all white. And then she said, let me just,
Oh boy.
lay some facts out here for you white people. Why do none of you come to our, you'll show up to an event like this, but no one comes to our rallies? It was incredibly offensive. It was one of the most offensive things I've ever seen. eventually the people in the audience start going, you know, we're here to come together and to mourn for people that we've lost. This is, you know, there were a lot of gay people there, but a lot of everybody kind of coming together sort of, it's a vigil.
So
it's a vigil.
This young woman was hijacking.
She was hijacking the vigil to complain about that nobody wants to attend her rallies. Probably for good reason.
That young person, you know, needs to learn some stuff about the world.
Yeah.
But okay, there's two angles of this to pursue. One is my theory for why this is happening. But then there's the also thing that it's like, it's just the media and social media aspect of this. Okay. There have been crazy things happening on college campuses since Harvard University was founded in 16, whatever. Only in the past couple of years has the technology permitted the current state of affairs where something crazy happens on a college campus. As soon as something crazy starts happening anywhere on Earth these days, people take out their phone and start recording it, and then it can go viral. So there have always been cranks on college campuses. In fact, college campuses are mostly made up of kind of wacky people. But now they say something wacky, and if they're going off on a rant like this young woman seems to have been, people take out their phones and they record it and they put it on YouTube. And then you and I can find it and talk about it. So there's always been kooky people in the world, and they allow them to locate themselves in college towns and on college campuses. Would you agree with that?
No, I totally agree with that. And I'm certainly not saying that there are more or that there are fewer kooky students with kind of crazy beliefs trying to have an activist movement. It's not more students, it's not less. I don't even think students' attitudes on net about kind of free speech and those things are actually changing all that much. There's some evidence they might be changing a little bit. It's just this minority of students that have always existed and probably always will. But it is, going back to what I said earlier, it is different that they have power.
The kooky people will always be with us. You know, the kooky people will always be with us.
But
I think that's the truth about humanity.
Professors who cross these kooky students are now in trouble in a way they were never in trouble before. People who these students have tremendous power to actually get people who cross them punished. I mean, I talk to professors who literally can't teach. They teach subjects that require students to do things that they just refuse. In that same New Yorker piece, there was a theater professor who was asking students to portray different roles, and they're offended by everything he tells them to act differently. And I've actually talked to other theater professors who've said the same thing. That students are so traumatized that they refuse to step outside their own body. It's like saying that they're not good enough or something.
Okay, that's unusual. Yeah. But let me just say that this is related to the media part of it, which is goes back to my vulgar Marxism stuff. Okay, the media, why are these professors so scared of 18, 19, 21, 22-year-olds? It's because anything can go viral these days. An aggrieved person can go viral. Sometimes an aggrieved person is, you know, has a rant or something that goes viral. Sometimes they flip out on, like, remember that one where the woman was, that video, the woman was, like, yelling in the Apple store about how, like, she'd been waiting there for a long time? Yeah. That went viral. So that used to be just something that would be, like, an amusing story that the other people in the store would tell their friends later. Now it's probably been viewed a million times. So it's like, the kooks have always been with us and always will, but the technology has changed and the incentive structure has changed to make it so that if you do something bad nowadays anywhere in the world, except if you're, well, even with what Edward Snowden has told us, sometimes even in the privacy of your own home, you do something bad, other people can find out about it.
And this, but like social media, yes, I agree. Social media also, though, has made it possible for, well, and like things like Tumblr, for these kinds of communities of aggrieved people to find each other all over the world and to share some kind of mass movement kind of solidarity. It's also a useful tool for them. Sure, it also leads to the media kind of exploiting it. And I mean, I can find a dozen of these incidents a week to write about because we live in such times where that's possible, sure. And so it's important not to blow it out of proportion or draw trend lines based on the fact that we're just now more able to know these things are happening. So I do always urge caution, yes.
Okay, so let's talk about my little theory about why this is happening.
Okay.
When I applied to college in 2001, I applied to 8 schools, and that was kind of a lot for back then. I was lucky enough to get into the ones I wanted to get into, but Most of the people I went to school with at a public high school in northern New Jersey, they applied to like four or five, like a safety, like three possibilities where they didn't know, and then like a reach. Like that's what it was in the late 90s, early aughts. Okay, today kids are applying to like 20, 30, 40, 50 schools, and that's not noteworthy. Like if someone back in 2001 had applied to 15 schools, like all, like me and all of my fellow classmates would have been like, what the hell is wrong with this person? Like, that's a lot of money to apply that many schools. What are you doing? Okay, it's easy. There's like an arms race with admissions. This is partially caused by the fact that universities are admitting more international students, and international students pay full freight. So, a university I'm aware of, roughly 100 students from each class of about, 1,200 or so are Chinese nationals, and they pay full freight. Most college has gotten so expensive that unless you're very wealthy, you cannot pay cash. You have to get loans or you get some kind of student aid. Okay, so you need to apply to a lot more colleges. It's a lot harder to get into a Ivy League or other school. If I was applying to Yale today, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't get in. The whole application process has gotten a lot more intense, a lot more stressful. Okay. Jonathan Haidt and another guy whose name you know, but I can't remember right now. What is that guy's name who wrote the cover article in The Atlantic?
Greg Lukianoff, yes.
Yeah, so they wrote this article that used some of the insights from cognitive behavioral therapy to talk about this whole new movement about microaggressions and all this stuff. It took me a while to kind of figure this out, but okay. When you're using cognitive behavioral therapy, it's probably because you either have anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, mania, some kind of mental illness that you need help with. And cognitive behavioral therapy is an effective way to treat mental illness without medication or in combination with medication. It's almost like these kids have PTSD from applying to schools and getting into elite schools. It's way hard. It's super stressful. They have to do very well on their SATs. They have to take a number of AP classes. They have to get the recommendations. They have to write the student essay. And even then, I'm an alumni interviewer for Yale. I see these kids who are applying to Yale from the greater Rochester, New York area. They are very impressive. I'm very impressed by them. I write them up in my little summary about them. And I say, I think this kid would be a good, he or she would be a good student who would thrive at Yale. They don't get in. Because there's like four or five times as many people applying as there were when I was a boy. Okay, it's very, very difficult to get into these elite schools. It almost makes you have a mental illness. It's like they really do have PTSD. So then once you have a mental illness, a minor aggression, a bad comment that someone makes, an attack on you personally can get blown out of proportion. That's kind of what I think is happening. Does this make sense to you or not?
Yeah, I don't know that I buy it though.
Okay, well tell me what you think.
Well, I mean, certainly the process of applying to college is incredibly stressful. I agree. It's credible to make the case that it's getting more stressful for the reasons you outline. I don't know if it's akin to developing PTSD though, because and I'm not a psychologist. I don't really know, but my understanding is that that comes from actually like way more traumatizing events like that, like having to kill someone, being in a combat zone, being a victim
You
of
can
a
have
violent crime.
PTSD. You can have PTSD from getting in a car crash.
Yes.
You can have PTSD from seeing a relative
Yes.
die.
Yeah. But I think
So
that's traumatizing.
it doesn't need to be you were a soldier in Iraq for 18 months.
No,
It can be
no, no.
a single traumatic event can cause some amount of post-traumatic stress disorder. Okay, going to an elite high school and applying to elite college is like 4 years of stress and anxiety.
I just don't know that it's the same kind of toxic stress that even being in a car crash or seeing a relative die or something like that is. I'm not saying it's not stressful. I just don't know if it's really the same kind of. I probably you can get PTSD from that. I just don't know that it would be something that would cause like a lot of people to have what psychologists would genuinely diagnose as
Yeah,
PTSD. Maybe it's
this
an
is
amorphous kind of. It's a spectrum of things to I mean, I don't know, maybe it is, but I don't think
Yeah, I this is not in the DSM yet.
Right.
But and I'm just spouting off here. I don't really know that much either.
Right.
But it does seem to me that like something has changed. Well, what has changed? Like we said before, there's some level of kind of kookiness that always exists on college campuses. But if we look at it in the vulgar Marxist sense, what has changed is that it's way harder to get in because they're admitting way more international students who can pay full fund. Their parents pay the $60,000 a year because they are like own a giant factory in China, and they can and then the kids are competing against these kids. In addition, they're competing against them in admissions, and they're competing against them once they get to college. And college is always stressful and difficult, no matter, if you go to an elite college, it is hard, it's difficult. So then the kids kind of develop these unusual
But
beliefs. Some of these beliefs sound like the beliefs that depressed and anxious people have.
at the same time, the colleges provide more resources, more mental health services than ever
There's a
before in human
reason. There's a
history.
reason. The kids need it.
Well, but maybe, or maybe they think they need it because it's being given to them with such great, they're being told that they have. I don't know. I'm just like
It's probably
that's
somewhere
one
in the probably
explanation.
somewhere in the middle.
It's probably somewhere in the middle. And I do, and obviously the amount of money they have to pay to go to college and the amount of loans they have to take out and all that is certainly like that is way worse now. It's understandable why that stress would be so much greater. It used to get, my parents could go to college, they could pay their own way, they could work part-time or something, or they could send summers, do jobs, they could pay for college on their own. Now you absolutely can't do that. Now you have to go horribly into debt, and being horribly, in debt as a 20-year-old is, I can see why that's like
Very
incredibly stressful.
stressful.
Yeah. So it's,
And then there's the whole like I can't flunk out aspect to it. Like if you already have $20,000 of loans after 1 year and you feel a lot of pressure, then it just adds to the stress if you feel like, well, I can't just go to community college now because I already have $20,000 of loans. How the hell am I going to pay this off? So it's a lot harder to be a college student even than it was, 10 years ago when I was a young man going to college. I'm glad that when I went to college, Facebook was in its extreme infancy and YouTube didn't exist. I mean, here's the last piece of it. I wrote some op-eds for my in college. No one cared, besides the people who read the Yale Daily News. Today, if a college student writes a wacky op-ed, you care about it, and I care about it too. And 50,000 weird people on Twitter care about it and might mock them mercilessly. Like, that's bad for everyone involved, I think.
It is. Well, it is. It is, and it isn't. It can also be good for you, I guess, if you're a college op-ed writer, you write a good op-ed or something, and it gets noticed. It
I
could be
guess
a.
it's a double so it's a double-edged sword. You can go viral in a good way, but how many 19-year-olds actually have a coherent thought that the world wants to learn? Probably not that many. Probably a lot more of them say something kind of
I don't know.
silly and half-formed, and then suddenly it goes viral in a bad way, and everyone's making fun of them. Like that's happened. It's happened way more times. Like things go viral. Like something that's bad goes viral more easily than something that's good.
Well, they could write a thing, a column responding to some crazy incident on their campus, and I might link to it in my coverage of it. I mean, bigger outlets than me might do so as well. There was a, I think it was Claremont. They published the student paper. I think it was the conservative student paper published a response to kind of the craziness going on called We Dissent. That was really good. It was actually really good, and that did go viral.
But
But
kind
I
of
hear you.
the natural human tendency towards Schadenfreude makes it, and kind of this belief like, oh, what are the college kids doing now? That kind of belief leads it more likely that if a 19-year-old writes a 500-word essay that's kind of silly or stupid, and then it goes viral. I mean, the only people that really helps are like Matt Drudge and the Huffington Post, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't help. Well, it doesn't help the cause of truth and knowledge, certainly, and it definitely doesn't help that student who is suddenly feeling like he or she is being attacked from all sides. Okay, do you want to move on to talking about libertarianism for a little bit?
Sure. Well, and maybe as a segue to that, I would say like so I sympathize with their economic situation. I think publicly funded state colleges and universities should be actually available to the public. I think, or they should be affordable rather to the public. So I have some kind of, I mean, it's not, but I think it's in line with
Geez, what
libertarianism.
kind of libertarian are you?
No, but I think it's in line with libertarianism if the residents of the state of Michigan are forced to subsidize the University of Michigan but none of their children could ever afford to go there in their wildest dreams. Why do they have to pay for this institution? I would be okay with the state legislature saying, like, look, you can't raise tuition. It has to actually be affordable. Or we just privatize the university and then can do whatever it wants. So that's kind of my answer to the sort of economic argument.
Yeah. So let's talk about libertarianism a little bit. So I had a tweet a couple days ago, just a thought that popped into my head. You know, the problem with libertarians is that they're too logical, especially about politics. American politics is weird.
You're flattering me. Yeah.
Okay, I mean, Mr. Spock had his advantages. A beloved character, but you also needed Captain Kirk there to kind of charge ahead. You know, politics is rational in some ways, but it's equally irrational in other ways. Libertarians kind of think that if we look at this rationally, we'll all agree that, like, the government should do this small set of things, this other set of things doesn't make a lot of sense. We should try to maximize freedom. The average American, the average Trump supporter certainly is on the opposite side of the libertarian split. And then, like, you know, that's kind of why libertarians can't really ever take power in America. They think about this too logically. You got to think about it more illogically. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, that's correct. That's true.
Okay, well, thanks for coming on, Robbie.
No, that's the problem of libertarianism. That's why, I mean, you know, the Libertarian Party candidate this time around is Gary Johnson and Vice President William Weld. Gary Johnson.
Two very serious people, both former governors of New Mexico and Massachusetts. Is that correct?
Yes. They govern as Republicans. They're very, very socially moderate, even socially liberal. Republican governors who balance the butt, who basically should offend no one. I mean, they're smart, good. They're good people who did interesting things that were broadly popular and broadly successful on spending and privatizing some services and school choice, but being socially tolerant and for gay marriage and for drug legalization. And Gary Johnson is the least charismatic person you will ever meet. He's just a regular guy.
I saw him on TV. I saw him on the Sam B show.
Yeah.
And he's a funny guy. Like, he could host his own talk show. He's a little bit of a weirdo. He has his own sense of charisma in that you want to keep watching him to see what he's going to say next, in the same way that Donald Trump has charisma. He's never going to be president, but he's not a flake. He's not like the guy who took his clothes off during the Libertarian Party convention and was standing there in, like, bikini briefs. You know, he's a serious guy.
Yeah. And I always bristle at the suggestion that, like, oh, well, and that guy who took off his clothes is obviously a nut job. But, like, the Republican Party nominated a reality TV star who wants to deport all Muslims. Democrats.
Not yet.
And the Democrats have selected someone who is just basically the wife of the last Democratic president and is a corrupt warmonger. So, like, they have embarrassed themselves. I don't know that the Libertarian Party having one person running around naked on stage is like, well, oh, at least, you know, maybe more naked people on stages, fewer warmongering, corrupt, authoritarian dictator personalities. How about that?
I would take that deal.
Yeah.
But that's not the deal on offer, sadly. No. Okay, do you think Gary Johnson is going to get to be in the debates in the fall?
I don't know. I really hope he is. I think that would be great. I mean, he has to get more. I actually don't understand how he has to get more.
I think it's 5, 10, or 15%.
I think it's 15% he has to get, right?
I think it's, in my head, it's 15%, which is a lot.
Yeah.
Nader was never in the debates, his name just popped out of my head, the little weird guy from Texas, Ross Perot.
Yeah.
He was in the debates in 92 and I think also in 96.
He was, but
Perot is kind of in the Trump line. He was kind of a proto Trump in many ways.
He was, it's not worth it, but I would defend him more than Trump. I think.
Yeah. He founded Texas Instruments. Yeah. Isn't that correct? They have their own scam dealing with, graph and calculators, but, let's not get into that.
Yeah.
Okay, do you think Gary Johnson has a shot at winning any of the 50 states?
No, not realistically. I think...
What about, like, New Hampshire or his home state of New Mexico?
Maybe New Hampshire, New Mexico, yeah. That's where he has a chance. It could happen. I don't think it's likely to happen. Because again, because I'm kind of cynical, and I think at the end of the day, a lot of Republicans will just kind of fall in line behind Trump. I'm hoping that doesn't happen. I would very much like to be wrong. I would love for the libertarians to have a, and I would make a pitch, I mean, to the American people, like, you should vote libertarian. You should want this kind of breakup of the party. This is not a bad guy. No one would feel bad voting for him. And more choices is good. And it's also just good if the Libertarian Party does well, because then they can qualify for public funding next time, maybe be on in debates in the
Public funding.
future.
The libertarian candidate wants public funding. What world are we living in? Jesus Christ.
If anyone can get it, the guy who wants to abolish it should.
I guess,
Would be
you
my
know.
yeah.
If that's the only thing preventing the Libertarian Party from taking off public funding, well then that's quite a pickle. I don't even know what to say
Yeah,
about
ha
that.
ha, yes, that's a far
No, but I mean, come on. Okay, do you okay, prediction time. Who is the next president of the United States going to be?
Hillary Clinton.
Okay, how many states do you think she's going to win?
I think I don't know exactly. Well, I told you I think it's going to be closer than you think. I predicted what was Romney's total? I predict a little bit more
Well,
than that.
let's do electoral college votes. I think Obama had around 360 electoral college votes. It
Yeah.
takes 270 to win.
Yeah. So I think she'll have somewhere between enough to win and less than President Obama.
Okay. Well, what states? I asked this of Jim Newell. What states that Obama won in 2012 do you think the Republican nominee, whoever he or she may be, could win in 2016? Like Michigan?
Yes, Michigan, Pennsylvania is where I'm looking at. Maybe I mean Bernie's. I'm actually looking at Bernie's unbelievable upset in Michigan as kind of the evidence for that. Given that there's more opposition than expected to Hillary Clinton, and some of those Bernie people going to Trump, I think it's a possibility. Yeah.
Yeah, and the free trade issue plays probably Michigan is the state that is
Right.
most anti-free trade for
Right.
obvious
This
reasons.
is my home state, by the way. This is actually the state I'm filming this video from at the moment, even though I resided in the
Okay, so
state.
we are firmly outside the New York, the Acela corridor right now. I'm in Western New York. You're in the wilds of Michigan. So you know Michigan well. Just here in Western New York, I'll just say I've seen way more Bernie signs than Trump signs. People are still holding out hope for Bernie. It's a cultural marker at this point, I guess, because obviously he can't win, although maybe these people are deluded and think he can win. But don't you think Bernie is going to campaign pretty hard for Clinton in the end?
Yeah, I think so. But I think there are
And
a
there's going to be a
lot of
lot of cog there's going to be a lot of cognitive dissonance, I
Yeah,
think, in
and
psychology
the
terms.
pro Bernie people that you and I know, the sort of pro Bernie journalists, sort of Jacobin type people or whatever,
Yeah, they're not
they're not going to go
representative.
for Trump, no. And they're going to mock the idea that anyone in the Bernie coalition would. They're already mocking that idea. They're
Yeah,
wrong. When
it
you talk
really
to
that's what they
regular
hate. They
Bernie
like hate
people,
they
they're
hate the most. That's what they hate the most. But it is
It
true.
is true.
Sorry, guys.
It is true.
Yeah, it's true. They don't understand how most people view politics. Most people are not socialists. They want to stick it to the man or stick it to their boss or some kind of vague abstraction like that. And they want someone who tells the truth, just like Bernie does.
And the libertarians have kind of had
I'm
their own version of this. Like we had, I mean, Ron Paul was the libertarian guy, and he
Yeah.
was a principled libertarian. But a lot of his
Yes.
supporters, it turns out, were not. They liked him. They didn't
Or
like.
they hated black people. I mean, that happened. Like the Ron Paul newsletter, or whatever the fuck that thing was called, catered to racist
It
neo-Confederates, et
did.
cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So that there's an ugly history there too. He wasn't just like the dissenting vote on the Patriot Act. He was also a guy who appealed to this kind of inchoate reactionary populism that is part of America that we like will always be with us.
Yeah, or his top advisors at the time very much urged him to, maybe would be
Yeah,
the
or
way
he, I mean,
to
either
ask
he
him.
was a fool, a holy fool. I mean, Bernie Sanders is kind of a holy fool, but he's definitely kind of a fool. I'm wagging my finger at the camera right now, just the way Bernie wags his finger in Hillary's face. You know, he doesn't understand intersectionality. Okay, so if you had to put a number, okay, so your number for the number of electoral votes Hillary Clinton will win would be like in the 320 range, like
Yeah, I
in.
guess so, yeah.
Okay. My guess would be, okay, how many are there total? There's 270 to win, that means it's 538. Of course, 538, the website.
Yeah.
530, that's my guess.
You think you're going to get 530?
530.
No, I don't think so.
You'll take the under on that one?
Yes. I want to be proven wrong, because I think the way that happens is, like, Gary Johnson gets, like, 5 to 10% of the vote because all Republicans defect or something. Yes, the world you're predicting is my dream world. So that's...
Okay, well... So, wouldn't it be pretty if it were so?
It would be.
We'll see what happens. Stay tuned. This is a very unusual year. We should probably wrap it up there, where we're both hoping for... Yeah, we have an optimistic... It's always nice to end on an optimistic note. An optimistic vision of the future. No, I think the Republican candidate, whoever he or she is, could win Wyoming, Mississippi and Alabama, maybe South Carolina... That's West Virginia. Those are the states that I see the Republican nominee winning.
Make it so, Paul Ryan. Defect. Make it so. Do it. You have nothing to lose but your chains.
Exactly. The only thing you have to lose is the scam. Yeah. That's all they have to lose, the scam. The scam has been a gravy train for 40, 50 years. Okay, time. Let us put aside childish things. Let's put the scam aside. The scam is over. Let the true conservative party, whatever it's going to be called, the real conservatives, face off against the America First Party led by Donald Trump. And then let the mushy liberals will have power for a while. But then, you know, true conservatives deserve a real voice in the government. I mean, if we had a parliamentary system, we'd have, you know, it's just the weird American system means that it's... Usually you have two parties. It's a two-party system, as in that famous Simpsons episode. I'm voting... Well, okay, the last thing. So I've been making fun of everyone involved, but I was... The New York State primary, on the Democratic side, I was like, who am I going to vote for? I don't really like either of these people. I don't... You know, Bernie Sanders, I can't vote for him. You know, I kind of think he's a fool. Hillary Clinton kind of disgusts me, but she's going to win anyway. Okay, what I came up with was... I'm from New Jersey... I said, I'll vote for Bill Bradley. I always liked him. He didn't win a single state in 2000. So I made some jokes online. I was actually coincidentally reading A Sense of Where You Are by John McPhee. When I had this idea, I guess that's what inspired me. He's a very, you know, a guy I'd be very happy if he became president somehow. But it's not going to happen. So I was like, okay, I'm going to write in Bill Bradley. So I went to my polling place. I was like, yeah, Bill Bradley. Bill Bradley's going to do this thing. They told me, you can't write someone, and that's not allowed.
Really?
So I voted. I don't know. Maybe they were wrong. It was just the old man there. And I was there towards the end of the day. And I was like, well, I can either just go home right now, but I already drove my car to the polling place. So I voted for Bernie. I was forced to feel the burn. I'm going to vote for Hillary in November.
Yeah.
I might as well, as a Jew, as a Jewish American, I might as well vote for the Jewish candidate. You know, who knows when I'm going to get that chance again. So I made a lot of jokes about it. I was forced to feel the burn. And it didn't feel good, but, you know, that's life. You have to, you go to war with the army you have, not the army you might want or wish to have. So I had two choices and I picked one, but I'm still happy to make fun of the Bernie people, and we'll see what happens. This is a strange year.
You should vote for the candidate that makes you feel good. Not the lesser of two evils. Your vote doesn't matter. So the only reason to bother to do it is if you're going to feel good about it.
No, that makes sense to me. If it comes down to one vote, that means the courts will decide it.
Right.
And so it only matters in the aggregate. Yeah, you might as well vote. You know, might as well speak your truth and vote for whoever you think the best candidate is. In the general election, maybe I will write in Bill Bradley. It depends how the campaign goes. My Blogging Heads colleague, Bill Scher, has been running a Twitter feed called Al Franken VP Watch or something like that. We'll find the actual link. He's been putting Franken up as VP. That would be, as someone who is a fan of comedy, that would be amazing to me. And he would be the first Jewish vice president. So we'll see what happens. Can you see yourself ever voting for the Democrat in the near future?
I'm gonna vote for Gary Johnson. I'm gonna vote for the Libertarian Party candidate. If the Libertarian Party nominated someone truly horrible, and my other choices were Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, I guess I would vote for Hillary Clinton. Like the gun to your head, what do you do? I might just say pull the trigger. I don't know.
Well, pull the trigger. That's got, I confronted that when I was like, should I'm already here. Yeah. Like, should I just go home? You know, but I was like, if I know this to begin with, maybe I wouldn't have gone. But I was there. I wanted to get the sticker. So I voted. But yeah, I mean, sometimes it is the lesser. In that case, it was the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, I guess. If they lie to you about what the rules are, right?
Yeah, then a lawsuit. I'll look into that. Okay, Robbie Suave, where can people find your stuff? We'll link to it, but for the podcast listeners, where can people find your content?
Reason.com/Robbie Suave, and at the Daily Beast.
And what about on Twitter?
Oh, yes, at my name, at Robbie Suave.
So that's Soave.
Yep.
Robbie Suave, Robbie with a Y and two B's. And I'm at RACW, ARYEHCW on Twitter. And so thanks for coming on. Maybe we'll have you on again as when this all sorts out in some weird way, and or maybe when Gary Johnson is poised to capture the presidency, we'll have you back on.
Yeah, then I'll have the power. Yeah, when you're in Gary Johnson's America.
Yeah, seriously.
But I won't do anything scary
but
with it, so it'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, does a libertarian want to have power? There's kind of a contradiction in terms.
Yeah.
That's why you get all these weirdos who want to run for the libertarian nomination. The libertarians who want power are kind of a even
Yeah.
weirder group than like the Republicans or Democrats who want power. Okay, we've tested the patience of our audience. Thanks, Robbie. Thanks to all of our viewers, and we'll see you again next time.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Blogging Heads TV. You can help support this content by remembering to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can subscribe to all Blogging Heads episodes or to a specific program by going to our subscribe page at bloggingheads.tv/subscribe. There you can sign up for podcast downloads via iTunes or Stitcher, or you can subscribe to our email and we'll send you an alert every time we post a new episode.